The content of this podcast should not be considered financial or investment advice. All interviews and discussions are opinions only, and the podcast has been created without taking into consideration the listener's financial objectives, financial situation, or needs. Listeners should obtain independent advice before making any financial decisions. Hi, this is Barry Fitzgerald, Garen Perreault columnist for Stockhead. Welcome to the Explorers Podcast. I need to be a copper producer or developer. The price of the red metal has taken off to near record levels and was last night quoted at $9,830 a tonne, or around $4.50 a pound if you prefer. Let's remember copper averaged all of $2.50 a pound in the first 6 months of 2020 when COVID-19 hit. Much of the gain can be attributed to the COVID-related supply concerns in South America and the monster-sized COVID-related economic stimulus around the world. But global decarbonisation through the electrification of everything is the longer-term and potentially explosive thematic, with copper supply shortages more or less baked in come 2025. On that front, the mighty Goldman Sachs has copper hitting $15,000 a tonne, or $6.80 a pound, by 2015. Hence, that opening comment about wanting to find a copper producer or developer to invest in. The trouble for investors here, though, is that pure exposure to the copper thematic is virtually non-existent on this Australian Stock Exchange, certainly when it comes to finding a junior with near-term development ambitions and some real projects under its belt. But we found one today in Orion Minerals. Its code is ORN, or Oscar Romeo November, and it's been trading at 3.4 cents a share. Orion has not one, but two copper and copper zinc projects in South Africa's Northern Cape, a place that the ever intrepid Dutch were mining back in the 1600s, and it's where you'll find South 32's manganese operations today. It's remote and harsh. The upside from a mining perspective, though, is that population density is extremely low and there is a burgeoning renewable energy industry sprouting up to possibly make green copper a reality, if you know what I mean. Now, there's a lot to talk about, so I won't mess around anymore. With that, I'll introduce Errol Smart. Errol's Orion's Managing Director, and he's speaking to us today from South Africa. So, hi, Errol, and thanks for your time today.
Hi, Barry. Good to speak to you again.
Okay, Errol, we need to talk about the O'Keeffe Copper Project and the shovel-ready Prieska Copper Zinc Project. The OCP, as we'll call the first one, was secured by the company earlier this year in an option deal. Before jumping into where you're at in terms of an initial resource and scoping study off the back of that, I think a brief history of the OCP would be great.
Now, Barry, the history of OCP is almost the history of mining of South Africa, because as you said, the Dutch actually did the first colonial mining in Africa on this site, actually, that we're busy evaluating at the moment, back in the 1650s. They were already digging and hand-cobbing copper ore out and shipping it back to Europe. And until the 1880s, they were hand-digging and hand-sorting ore out. And in fact, you could not get a mineral right or a mining right from the governor of the Cape Colony, which was then British, unless you could demonstrate that you could ship out ore at over 18% copper in hand sorting. And it was only in the early 1900s that they started building the first smelters, because this is in a very remote place of South Africa, in a desert. It's a very harsh environment. And they struggled to get fuel to actually fire any smelters. So, you know, eventually in the 1930s, Newmont saw the opportunity. They consolidated all of these mines in the district, and there were over 32 small mines in about a 20-kilometer radius. So they're all on top of each other. And, you know, it's reminiscent of what you see around the super pit, or what you would have seen around the super pit 30 years ago, 40 years ago maybe, is that huge opportunity of dozens and dozens of small operations next to each other that had been going for forever and a day, and just had a much bigger opportunity. But Newmont saw it, and they actually started developing mechanized mining there. By the 1950s, they had a large-scale mechanized mine operating. They were doing 40,000 tons per annum of copper. as you go through the cycles of the metal pricing, eventually Goldfields bought it in the early 1980s, operated at above 30,000 tons per annum of copper production, and eventually in the 90s sold it to Metarex, who, as the price fell in South Africa and they had put together the Ruashi with the eye-dripping grades that were there, decided to strip the OKIP mine and take the equipment and all the technical skills up to the copper belt, and leaving OKIP as an orphaned asset. And it's a fantastic asset. You know, we've been blown away. If you go through the Goldfields resource statements, because Metrix didn't do any further exploration work, they mined a couple more million tons, but they basically didn't add anything to the resource. They extracted a bit. But if you take what they extracted and what Goldfields had in their resource statements before they sold it, there's about 50 million tons still remaining there. And that's what got our attention. It's a walk-up opportunity for a district where there's been mechanized mining practice for more than 50 years. You've got all these pre-developed mechanized mines. Most of them are at grassroots level, you know, 50 to 200 meters deep. So that's what just caught our attention immediately.
Okay. Fantastic opportunity by the sounds of it. Now, just highlighting how advanced walk-up this OCP is, you're now at the point already with a maiden resource and scoping study into what, a foundation project or a startup project?
Yeah, and that's what really caught our attention. You know, Goldfields being a really sound company and with a huge reputation, we knew that we'd be able to take those old resources that were done before JORC. It was obviously long before JORC was a glint in the eye of anybody. But we knew the quality of the work, and some of the geologists, in fact, the chief geologist that did our resource work for the Prieska project, he was actually the chief exploration geologist at OKIP when Goldfields were still there. So he was the competent person in charge of all the drilling and sampling. And we also realized that the guys that owned the prospecting rights on this property and mining right application on this property had missed a beat. They did not own the data. They didn't own the Goldfields data. In fact, it's owned by an individual that's currently sitting over in Australia. And we managed to track this guy down, and we very quickly did a deal to secure the data. So now we've remarried the data with the mineral title, and we've got the geologists that did the original exploration work. The combination of those three allows to very quickly fast-track into JORC-compliant resources, and with confidence, because you've got all this history, very well-documented history of your metallurgical characteristics, and a lot of these ore bodies were actually mined historically, some small mining out of it. So you've got the metallurgical history, you've got the rock engineering conditions, it's all very well understood. You've got all your services in place, you've got power and water and roads accessing the sites, and you've got a mining community there that have got centuries of mining in their blood. Their DNA in this Springbok OKIP district is mining. So you've got dozens and dozens of highly skilled mining people sitting there, and those that aren't actually sitting at home at the moment looking for a job are actually the traveling FIFOing, if you like, in Australian speak, to other mining operations elsewhere in South Africa where they don't want to be. They want to be at home. So you've got a highly skilled labor set available. You've got all the data and information. You've got the ability to do low-cost mining. And that's why we did the scoping study. We needed to ascertain in today's numbers, what does it cost to mine the OKIP ore? Can you make money at the grades that they used to mine? But more importantly, the low-hanging fruit, the stuff that's immediately available and pre-developed. The stuff that's immediately available and pre-developed is obviously slightly lower grade than what they were mining as run-of-mine at the time, because it was their less attractive ores and it was lower in their production schedules. So we've very quickly, and it's only 3 months since we took the option on this property, but in 3 months, we've already got out 11.5 million tons of JORC resource. Now, remember, we're busy harvesting what was originally over 50 million tons of resource in the Goldfields books. Now, this first 11.5 million tons that we've chosen to model and prioritize has got an average grade of around 1.3% copper. Can you make money at 1.3? Well, hell yes, you can. We've shown with this study that the underground mining pay limit is about 0.8% copper. And similarly, the open pits that we modeled also can be mined at 0.8% copper. So we've shown that the ore that we've got is commercially attractive. And that's why we started the study. It's part of a due diligence. Remember, this wasn't a mine plan for us. This is a due diligence on should we do this acquisition or not? Does it make commercial sense? But as we were doing the study, we realized that this really is a walk-up mining opportunity. And within 16 months, you could actually construct a mine and be producing, and it sounds like a small number, around 9,000 tons a year of copper. But that would generate over $30 million per annum of free cash flow. Now, that's attractive in anybody's speak, particularly when you're acquiring an asset for $7.5 million in shares. So it is starting to look like something really, really attractive. And having a development partner there, the group of properties that we modeled for the scoping study, our joint venture partner would be the Industrial Development Corporation, the IDC in South Africa. The IDC obviously are the preeminent financiers of mining in South Africa. They tend to be the lead financial institution in any mining finance in South Africa. And they've got a very strong development mandate, job creation and regional economic development. Now, that's aligned with Orion's principles. We want to be a high ESG operator. So we've got a natural partner with the IDC. The IDC are obviously cash flush. They've got the money to finance projects like this. And having an aligned vision right from day one just makes life a lot easier. So it does definitely hang a low-hanging fruit in front of us of early production, early cash flow. We know that Prieska is going to take us 3 to 4 years before we start generating cash flow out of that. And having an OKIP alongside that will be generating cash within 16 months and be an extremely valuable training ground. You know, the mining methods have got a lot of similarity. The machines extremely similar. The metallurgical process in some ways very similar, although Prieska is copper and zinc. OKIP is copper only. But it's great to have a training ground of really simple, easy stuff. You know, out at OKIP, I can be from my office to a working face underground within probably 10 minutes. I could jump in a vehicle and drive into it. Now, that's a huge advantage compared to a mine like Prieska that, you know, we're going to be mining at 900 meters depth. So there's a lot more logistical complication. But Prieska is this big screaming jewel box. And OKIP, we think, is possibly the crown jewel, and it's just sitting in a jewel box alongside. But we can use common logistics, common financial management. Our senior management can share with landing strip on both sides. With an hour flight between the two, we could be zipping between the two mines. There's just so much synergy between the two operations. And as you said earlier on, early copper production at the moment is absolutely king. With copper at over 10,000 US a ton, we want to be in production as soon as possible.
Mm. And just to reemphasize the point that this is very much what you've done here with the scoping study is very much, well, you're seeing it as what, a foundational, just a startup project. I was just wondering, is there any sense you're able to give at this stage about what the bigger picture might be over the longer term?
Between Newmont and Gold Fields, they maintained that 30 to 40,000 ton per annum of copper production for decades and decades. And mining didn't stop because they ran out of ore. Mining stopped because of commercial reasons at the time and the challenges that South Africa was going through in the 1980s with the change and the fall of the apartheid system and bringing in a new system of governance in South Africa. That's what stopped these mines, not because they ran out of ore. And we think, and we're now more convinced than ever, that there's a very real possibility of reestablishing the same kind of production profile that Newmont and Gold Fields maintained. A big central milling plant, probably milling in the order of 3 million tons per annum and producing 30 to 40,000 tons per annum of copper. And, and this can be achieved probably in the same time frame as what we'll have Prieska in production. And that's what becomes the eye-watering opportunity here.
Yeah. I was just going to ask about Prieska. It's shovel-ready, which is, of course, another way of saying, but for financing, it would be up, up and away. Where are you at with the financing?
Yeah, the financing, geez, I'll tell you what, it drives me nuts. As a mining guy, we want to be turning dirt. And, in fact, we are in a very small way doing some things on site. But it's in that arm wrestle at the moment on financing terms with a consortium of banks. It is a chunky financing. So we are dealing with a consortium of banks, both commercial banks and development finance agencies. And, you know, we're arm wrestling about basis points of finance at the moment. So I never know how long this piece of string is because the bankers can drive us nuts. But we hope that we're going to have term sheets in hand, you know, in this coming quarter. We hope that we're going to start seeing the first term sheets and over the next two quarters get it locked and loaded so that by year end we can be moving forward. Let's hope that COVID doesn't do another run at us. That did create a big problem because we just couldn't move. The bankers couldn't get people to site to do due diligences and that kind of thing, but we are able to freely operate now. South Africa is on a level one lockdown, and we've had some of our lowest COVID infection rates for the last 12 months have been in the last month. So
that's great to hear.
Looks well under control, and at last we're starting to have meaningful discussions with all the bankers, and they finding each other, because that's the problem with consortia. You know, you've got multiple parties that have to agree with each other, but we've seen a clear path to that happening now over coming months.
Yeah, I dare say that $4.50 a pound copper will bring a greater concentration of everyone's minds to the subject at hand.
Yeah, and you know, hopefully being able to produce at $2.05, Prieska $1.69. You know, that's why we need to hit production and hit it soon.
Yeah, okay. Now, I know you're a bashful type, Errol, but I have noticed you and the company have been recognised with some awards over there in South Africa for trailblazing work in bringing a new era, a new way of mining to the country. What is that alluding to?
Yeah, we won the Australia-Africa Mining Exploration Group Award for the junior mining leader for ESG in Africa. It is a great recognition. It is really a recognition of what we've been doing for 5 years already. Before ESG became the clarion call, before everybody knew it, in fact, certainly before we recognized it as something that would become the driver for financing of businesses, we were doing it because it's the right thing to do. And it's not always easy in third world countries. You know, we do have challenges because people are desperately deprived. And when you have big projects like this, there's a bun fight over who gets the cake. But we are working very strongly with our community. We believe in renewable energy. We believe in the future of water security. And all of those things have become core and are fundamental in our feasibility studies. And it got recognized by the AMEC group. But in South Africa as well, we have been recognized as basically a leader. Because there are no junior miners operating in South Africa, we have become the leader of how to acquire, put these things through, and actually develop with a social license to operate.
Right. Well, that's great to hear, Errol, particularly as the Australian flag will be fluttering away over the head office, I presume, at some point at O'Keefe and Prieska. And just to finish things off, this is like a steak knife story, really, because you get the two copper projects in South Africa. But I've just noticed that IGO is finalising planning to be start drilling at the Pike Eye nickel target, which is 10 k's along trend from Legend Mining's Mawson nickel deposit, which Euros is saying is shaping up as a potential world-class deposit. What's the story at Pike Eye?
Yeah, Pike Eye has been a huge frustration because we loved it. I mean, we do love it. We think it's a great project. And more than a year ago, IGO, our partners, and we're on a 30% free carry there, IGO did drill some holes. There's some great EM anomalies, gravity anomalies. They drilled a couple of diamond drill holes, intersected mafic intrusives with nickel sulfides in them. Unfortunately, the site of Pike Eye and Hook, and Hook is the one that's probably the forerunner at the moment, but there's four or five hot targets there. But the Hook target, there's a 18,000 Siemen off-hole conductor in that target, and the host geology, and I'm speaking to people that have actually seen the Legend core, it's identical to what they're drilling through at Morse. So, yeah, we can't wait. Unfortunately, it's been a big frustration because of logistics. It's an area where it's extremely dry. The station owner there has struggled with water. The roads collapse completely. Unlike at Mawson, our roads are over the Aussie term bulldust. You just can't move machines there. Destroys the station's roads. So it's taken a year of working with the station owner and making sure that we can get a sustainable access to the sites, that we can bring in big drilling fleets and machines. We've got that in place now. There is an agreement to put in a new water pipeline. That's going to give sufficient water. And we're expecting drilling to get back underway in the next month or two. So that's very, very promising. And if you look at what Legend had put out in the last few days again, that trend just points straight at Hook. And Hook is only 10 kilometers away from the closest massive sulfide drilled at Mawson now.
And I'll just make the point there too that Legend now has a $350, $400 million market cap from what's still an evolving story at Mawson. But...
And we've got a 30% free carry at Pike and Hook.
Okay. So there we go, folks. A great copper and copper zinc story emerging in South Africa, as well as the excitement that might come from the nickel exploration project in the Fraser Range back here in Australia. So thanks for your time today, Errol. I know you've been very busy. We look forward to watching progress and look forward to first copper production out of South Africa.
Thank you very much, Barry.